ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम्। कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 8 Chapter entitled Lord Krishna Shows the Universal Form, text number 25. Shringi Agni Dam Shri Asi Jala Dvija Kantakebhya. Krida Para Ati Chalau स्वसुतौ निषेद्धिम् गृह्याणि कर्तुमपि यत्र न तज्जनन्यो शेकात आपतुरलं मनसो नवस्ताम्। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: when Mother Yashoda and Rohini were unable to protect the babies from calamities threatened by horned cows, by fire, by animals with claws and teeth such as monkeys, dogs and cats, and by thorns, swords and other weapons on the ground, they were always in anxiety and their household engagements were disturbed. At that time, they were fully equipoised in the transcendental ecstasy known as the distress of material affection, for this was aroused within their minds. Purport: all these pastimes of Krishna and the great enjoyment exhibited by the mothers are transcendental. Nothing about them is material. They are described in the Brahma Samhita as Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. In the spiritual world, there is anxiety, there is crying, and there are other feelings similar to those of the material world. But because the reality of these feelings is in the transcendental world, of which this world is only an imitation, Mother Yashoda and Rohini enjoyed them transcendentally. So today we are reading from 10th canto, chapter 8, entitled Lord Krishna Shows the Universal Form. So in this particular chapter, so far we heard from different devotees about how Krishna and Balaram were named by Gargacharya, were given their original names, Krishna and Balaram. And then now we see the various childhood pastimes of Krishna. And then later we'll also hear this pastime of Krishna showing his universal form. So we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam actually describes Krishna and his various incarnations and describes the different devotees, describes the pastimes of various incarnations like Prithu Maharaj, Rishabhadev, Varahadev, Vamandev. And then now in the 10th canto, Shukadeva Goswami is describing the Krishna, who is the source of all the incarnations, who is the avatari, who is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, even other Krishna is not only attractive to everyone, in fact even other incarnations and even the Lord of Vaikuntha is attracted towards Krishna. I was reading the 5th canto. There, Shukadeva Goswami describes about Lord Rishabhadev, who is another incarnation of the Lord. So when Lord Rishabhadev was traveling through the different countries, traveling through different cities and villages. So Rishabhadev, his hair was disheveled and he had a natural smile in his face, which attracted everyone's attention. As one devotee was saying that nowadays, like, there is a special field in dentistry in which, like, people try to create some artificial smile. Like many, like, celebrities and big people, they want to have a good smile. So they go to, they consult these dentists and they make some changes, they make some, they do some treatment so that people can have some artificial good smile. But Rishabhadev had such a natural smile that it was so beautiful. And his reddish eyes were spread like the petals of a newly grown lotus flower, covered with dew in the early morning. So his eyes were so beautiful. And his eye races were so beautiful that anybody who actually looked at the eye races of Rishabhadev, they completely forgot their distress. And then it was described that Rishabhadev had a gentle smile in his face. And he had such a gentle smile that it attracted the attention, that it attracted the minds of even married women. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Vishwadev's gentle smile attracted the attention of even the city women. So he gives a different angle to it. So basically, and Prabhupada writes in his purport that he actually makes an important point. He says that actually Rishabhadev's body was completely neglected. Like usually, if you want others to be attracted towards us, then we have to pay so much of attention to our body. Like the kind of dress we wear, the kind of hairstyle, the kind of perfumes, or the different the scent or different this thing which one, like, one has to use so much of cosmetics, one has to be very particular in order to make sure that others are attracted towards us. So Rishabhadev, his body was completely neglected. In his most neglected state, his smile was so attractive that it attracted the minds of even married women or city women. So we can see, this is actually the beauty of the Lord. And what to speak if you had actually paid attention, like how much more it would be attractive. But that Rishabhadev, it was described that Rishabhadev was meditating on Lord Vasudev. Actually, Rishabhadev is actually Krishna himself. He is just an incarnation of the Lord. But why was he meditating on Lord Vasudev or Lord Krishna? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions, he says, this shows that Lord Krishna or Lord Vasudev is the most worthy of worship among all the avatars of the Lord. He is actually attractive even to all the avatars. So this is the position of Lord Krishna. So that is why Uddhava, in the third canto, when he was actually remembering Krishna, he says this most beautiful verse. He says, Yanmartya leelau payikam swayoga maya balam darshayita grihitam vismapanam swasya cha saubhagarde param padam bhushana bhushanangam. So Uddhava is remembering Yanmartya leelau payikam swayoga. Lord Krishna appeared in a human body, but this human body is actually composed, but his body is actually composed of his spiritual potency. He appeared, he accepted a body which is actually made of his internal energy. And he exhibited such opulences and such pastimes that even those people who are proud of their opulence, They were astonished by the pastimes of Krishna. Vismapanam swasyacha saubhagarde. Even those who are proud of their opulences, that actually refers to Lord Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha, even they were actually attracted at the opulences and pastimes of Krishna. In fact, Prabhupada writes in the purport that Lord Narayan is only merciful to the Nitya Siddhas. But Lord Krishna is not only merciful to the Nitya Siddhas, but he is also merciful even to the Nitya Baddhas, the eternally conditioned living entities. So in his opulences, he attracted even Lord Vaikuntha. And even in his display of compassion and mercy, he actually surpassed even the Lord of Vaikuntha. And Prabhupada further writes in the purport, Lord Krishna's pastimes were attractive even to other incarnations of the Lord, like Lord Ram, Varahadev, Narsingadev, and as we saw, even Rishabhadev. So one may think, the acharyas raise the question, one may think maybe Krishna wore some special ornament. Maybe he wore a special brand of shirt, or he had a special particular diamond or something like that, because of that he was attractive. So then he clarifies by saying, Parampadam Bhushana Bhushanangam. It is not that some Krishna had some special ornaments, because of that he appeared more attractive. Actually, Krishna is the ornament of the ornaments. That means the ornaments which Krishna wore, they were actually beautified. Their beauty increased because of coming in contact with Krishna. So this shows that Krishna is actually attractive even to the other incarnations of the Lord. In fact, we see that Srimad Bhagavatam is the personification of Krishna. It's not different from Krishna. And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is actually the personification of Srimati Radharani, the eternal consort of Lord Krishna. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Paribhasa Sutra, or the shloka by which one of the most foundational verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that Krishne Swabdamo Pagate Dharma Jnanadibhisaha Kalau Nashta Drisham Yesha Puranarko Adunoditaha. That after Lord Krishna disappeared from this world, Srimad Bhagavatam arose in order to dispel the darkness of Kali Yuga. This is called as the Paribhasa Sutra. Paribhasa Sutra means the whole book rests on this particular verse. So this particular verse says that Srimad Bhagavatam is actually non-different from Krishna. So similarly, the Paribhasa Sutra, the foundational verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the most important verse in which the entire book is actually resting, is that Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama. This is actually such an important verse. In fact, some other time we'll discuss this verse. In fact, every word in this particular verse is very carefully chosen by Rupa Goswami. When you actually understand this particular verse in great detail, we'll actually understand the genius of Srila Rupa Goswami, who has actually composed this particular verse. I would especially like to highlight one particular word. So this particular verse actually defines what is actually pure devotional service, what is Uttama Bhakti. So he actually gives, Uttama Bhakti should have three primary characteristics and two secondary characteristics. The first and foremost of all the primary characteristics is that devotional service is for Krishna. And the second is, devotional service is performed by following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas and one's personal spiritual master. And then it is actually rendered in a favorable attitude. The secondary characteristics are, devotional service should be freed from all ulterior motives and should not be covered by jnana and karma. But especially when you take this particular first primary characteristics, Krishna Anushilanam. Krishna. So devotional service is for Krishna. So when we actually hear this, one may think, maybe it seems too exclusive. It means unless you worship Krishna, unless you serve Krishna directly, then nothing can be, all other activities are not devotional service, one may think like that. But Rupa Goswami says, Prabhupada writes in the introduction, the word Krishna means Krishna, his actually, his expansions, his avatars and his energies. Then one may think, then it appears it is too inclusive. That means it includes everything. It includes all the its energies, include actually all the material world, all the living entities, all the material energy, one may think like that. Then he further clarifies. Actually, specifically, Krishna means Krishna, his incarnations, his devotees, his abode, and his paraphernalia. When a person renders service to either Krishna or his incarnations, means like any of the forms of Vaikuntha or any of the Vamandev, Parashuram, Rishabhadev, Prithumara, Varahadev, or any of his devotees, the spiritual master, or the paraphernalia, the holy dhamma of the Lord. So all these are actually devotional service. So Rupa Goswami, by using the word Krishna, he's actually, we understand the devotional service neither too exclusive nor too inclusive. It is neither too exclusive in the sense that only if you render service to Krishna, it is devotional service. It is not like that. At the same time, it is not too inclusive in the sense that you render service to anybody and everything, anybody and everyone. Sometimes people say, Manav Seva is Madhav Seva. So it's not that you do anything and everything, it becomes devotional service. It is, so we see, Rupa Goswami is actually carefully choosing this word Krishna. But when he chooses the word Krishna, we see how Rupa Goswami is accommodating. He's accommodating that when you render service to any of the incarnations of the Lord, when you render service to like holy dham, like want to be cleaning the floor, or want to be like making garlands or different thing, different services. So all these services are devotional service. So he's actually accommodating, all accommodating. But at the same time, he's also presenting the essence, what is the topmost, by using the word Krishna. So usually, when we try to accommodate people, many times we may tend to dilute the essence. And sometimes, when we try to present the essence, we may not be able to accommodate different kinds of people. There will be some people who will be put off. They may actually find, oh, this person is too fanatic. But the position of an acharya is that he presents the essence, at the same time he actually accommodates everyone. In fact, we see this particular mood also being exhibited by Krishna in the 12th chapter of the Gita, where Krishna says, Mayeva mana adatsva, mai buddhim niveshaya, nivashishyasi mayeva ata urdvamna samshaya. Fix your mind on me, fix your intelligence on me, then definitely you will come back to me without a doubt. But if you cannot do this, then practice the regulative principles of devotional service. If you cannot do that, work for me. And if you cannot do that, at least sacrifice for some good cause. So Krishna is presenting the highest, but at the same time is actually accommodating. So Rupa Goswami, that is why he is actually Acharya. Because an Acharya is one who presents the essence, at the same time he accommodates. So we saw how Rupa Goswami is accommodating. that devotional service rendered to any of the incarnations of the Lord, the holy abode, devotees, all these are actually, it's actually devotional service. But at the same time, he's actually using the word Krishna. He could have used the word Vamana Anushilanam, Parashurama Anushilanam, Varaga Anushilanam. And why did he use the word Krishna? Because by using the word Krishna, he's actually indicating that devotional service rendered to Krishna is topmost when we see from the point of view of the transcendental mellows. Rupa Goswami speaks a verse, Siddhantvastha Abedepi Srisha Krishna Swarupayo Rasenot Krishyate Krishna Rupam Yesha Rasasthitaha. He says, according to transcendental realization, there is no difference between the forms of Narayan and Krishna. But yet in Krishna, there is a special transcendental attraction due to the conjugal mellow, and consequently he surpasses Narayan. So from when we see from the point of view of Siddhanta, transcendental realization, then devotional service rendered to Krishna or is any of his incarnations is actually same. But when we see from the point of view of transcendental mellows as rasa tattva, devotional service rendered to Krishna is actually topmost. It surpasses actually devotional service rendered to all the incarnations of the Lord. So Rupa Goswami is indicating, is accommodating, at the same time he is presenting the topmost. So that is why he is actually an acharya. Rupa Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose him as the acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And we see, particularly in this particular verse, Mother Yashoda and Rohini, they were always in anxiety that Krishna and Balaram, because it is described Ati Chalav. Before that I will describe the word Ati Chalav. Prabhupada gives the word-to-word translation as Krishna and Balaram were too restless. So they wanted to play with like monkeys and dogs which had like sharp teeth. They wanted to touch fire. They wanted to like play with cows with horns. So they were too restless. We see there are so many verses in the Bhagavatam. Like in the Prachaita's prayers they say, Manas apartam vilasadvayaya. They say that when a person fixes one mind on the Supreme Lord, then the dualities of the world become meaningless. But here, we see Krishna and Balaram were they too restless. Like another verse in the third canto, when Kapila Devi is instructing to Devahuti, when he's instructing about how to meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. That verse, Shiva Shivobhut. He says that when a person meditates on the all auspicious Lord Shiva, who is already blessed, he becomes all the more blessed when he meditates on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Yes, when a person meditates on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord acts like a thunderbolt. And there is the mountain of dirt is accumulated in the mind of a conditioned soul. And when a person meditates on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, because it's like a thunderbolt, if you want to destroy a mountain, you need the help of a thunderbolt. And the lotus feet of the Lord actually destroys the mountain of dirt which is accumulated in the heart. But that Krishna, he is actually completely restless. So this is actually the inconceivable nature of the Supreme Lord. And we see here, Mother Yashoda and Rohini, they were engaged in their household duties, but they were always in anxiety that what, maybe Krishna and Balaram may be attacked by other animals. So they would, they could not concentrate on their household duties, and they went to take care of Krishna and Balaram. So they, in this way, they were constantly in anxiety, Prabhupada says, this way they were fully equipoised in the transcendental ecstasy known as the distress of material affection. For this was aroused within their minds. So usually, like we see, like most people take to spiritual life seeking some peace. Because in the material world, everyone is actually tormented by so many anxieties. Like, I was going through this Titanic, like, there was an interview, like somebody asked, they did an interview of all the people who survived the Titanic. I was just saying that actually those people who survived the Titanic, they actually never survived, because later they died. But such detailed interviews were taken. If you want to actually take interview of people, we should take the interview of those people who survived the cycle of birth and death. Actually, such interviews are already taken and their lives are mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in one such interview, like they were asking question that, like, when the ship started sinking, like, what was the reaction of the people in the ship? Was there any, like, panic and were they panicking? Was there any nervousness? So, that person replied, he said, actually, the people in the ship were beyond panic. They were actually screaming at the top of the voice. They were like hysteric. Like most people, when they get into distress, when they get some suffering, people become stressful. They were like suffering from stress, and then sometimes they take to spirituality. So most people come to spirituality seeking some peace. But here, Mother Yashoda and Rohini, they were in anxiety, but they were actually, it said that they were in the transcendental ecstasy. They were fully equipoised in the transcendental ecstasy known as the distress of material affection. So again, like if you want to, in order to highlight this, there is an important verse in the second canto. Of course, this verse is quoted for many other, to emphasize how one should perform devotional service, but there is another important point which is like highlighted by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. In the second canto, Shukdev Goswami speaks this verse, Akama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. He says, whether a person is freed from all the material desires, or whether a person is filled with all the material desires, or whether a person has desire for liberation, all these people should actually perform intense devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Of course, this verse is quoted very often that how, whatever desire you may have, just perform intense devotional service to the Lord. But there is another important point which is highlighted by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. When we see these three words, akama, sarva kama, and moksha kama. So akama means there is no material desire, like zero material desire. And sarva kama means like a person is filled with all material desires. And how many material desires a person can have? Like Niti Shastra says that if you use the whole sky as the paper, and if you use all the oceans as the ink, and if you try to write the number of desires, the ink will get over and the paper will become over. Still there, but the desires will still be there. That means like the number of material desires are infinite in number. So zero, akama, sarva kama is infinite. And moksha kama means like desire for liberation. So it appears like when a person, like if you see from the mathematical point of view, it's like zero, infinity and one. One may say either it should be in the ascending order or in the descending order. Either it should be zero, one or infinity, or like infinity, one or zero. Either it should be like akama, moksha kama, or sarva kama, or sarva kama, moksha kama, or akama. Or for example, suppose if you tell a beggar, he wants to, and if you tell, okay, here is a rich man, whether you want no money, or whether you want 10 million rupees, or whether you want 1 rupee, please approach this beggar. Please approach this man. So it seems a little illogical. Huh? Like 1 rupee should be mentioned like after, whether you want no money. Huh? So it appears it is illogical, but actually Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, he says, why moksha kama is mentioned after sarva kama, the desire for liberation. He says, the person desiring liberation, he says that moksha kama is mentioned separately in order to cut down the people's thoughts, in order to cut down the people's thoughts that those who desire liberation are without any desire. Sometimes people may be thinking, oh, I'm just desiring liberation. I don't have any material desire. I don't want to accumulate money. I don't want to go to heavenly planets. I'm desireless. So that is why it is mentioned separately to cut down the people's thought that they are without desire. Or he says, or the person desiring liberation is even more filled with desire than the person desiring material comforts because it follows after sarva kama. That means the desire for liberation is actually even higher than the desire for any of the material comforts. See, the word kama means, why does a person desire? In order to get freedom from distress and in order to get some happiness. So usually karmis, materialistic people, they want to get relief from some temporary distress and they want to get some happiness, of temporary happiness, like going to heaven, or sometimes like in the Kali Yuga, maybe going to America, like that, something like that. But in the case of jnanis, they want to get like freedom from distress by actually getting out of the suffering of samsara, the cycle of birth and death. And they want to get the happiness of merging into the impersonal Brahman. Actually, this desire is actually higher than all the material desires. That is why it is mentioned after sarva kama. So it is not that the words are mentioned in the zigzag fashion. It is actually in the ascending order. Actually, Prabhupada points out in the Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter, first verse in the purport, Prabhupada writes in the purport, the desire for liberation is greater than any material desire. And Rupa Goswami, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he says that there are two desires which are actually unfavorable for the development of devotional service. That is bhukti and mukti. And he says, these two desires are compared to pishachis, or the ghosts. Because when a ghost actually haunts a person, he actually forgets his original interest. Similarly, when a person is filled with material desire or desire for liberation, a person forgets his original goal of life, that is devotional service to the Lord. And then Rupa Goswami gives various quotations in order to prove how this desire for the bhukti and mukti are not desired by so many devotees. And in order to show that how bhukti is unfavorable for the development of devotional service, he gives some 4 or 5 quotes. But in order to show that how the desire for liberation is unfavorable for devotional service, he gives a series of 25 quotes. He gives a thorough treatment. Prabhupada dedicates one full chapter, Devotional Service Surpasses Liberation, the Nectar of Devotion. So here we see, that this transcendental ecstasy is called as the distress of material affection. And then another point which I want to highlight is that, like here, Mother Yashoda is in anxiety, but she is actually in the topmost ecstasy. Like we see, in the transcendental mellows, Again, Srila Rupa Goswami describes that there are five primary rasas and seven secondary rasas. Dasya, Sakya, Madhurya, Vatsalya, Shanta, and then Raudra, Bibhatsa, Baya, like that. So many secondary rasas. And he say, like sometimes a person may consider these secondary rasas. That means like when a devotee is like crying, or when a devotee is like fearful, or when a devotee is in anxiety, one may think, oh, he is also exhibiting material emotion like any conditioned soul in the material world. So Rupa Goswami again, just few years back, in the Brahmachari class, when you are having this Rasa Vichar classes, so the devotee was discussing from Nectar of Devotion, that Rupa Goswami says that he talks about Hanumanji in the Ramayana. He says that an apparently pitiable condition in devotional service may appear distressing to the inexperienced student, but the feelings of devotee in this pitiable condition are considered to be ecstatic by expert devotees. Sometimes a devotee, he may be like crying or he may be in anxiety. It may appear to be like distressing for an inexperienced person, but an expert devotee will understand he is actually in the topmost ecstatic situation. So he gives an example of Hanumanji. Like for example, Ramayana is actually filled with distress. Like Lord Ram, he was banished to the forest by Dashrath Maharaj. And then Dashrath Maharaj dies. And then he goes to the forest. And then Sita is kidnapped. And then Lord Ram fights war against Ravan. And then so many problems during the war. And then he retrieves Sita. But then Sita is tested by fire. And then Lord Ram and Sita come back to Ayodhya. And again Sita is banished to the forest. See, if we see, Ramayana is actually filled with distress. Like I say, all the movies, like most movies, they want to have a happy ending. Although reality it is never, like, because they don't want like people to come to the movie, they also go in distress. So, but we see like Ramayana is actually filled with distress actually. But one may think, but then Hanumanji, he is actually daily reading Ramayana. If Ramayana is filled with distress, why would Hanumanji daily read Ramayana? That shows that actually Ramayana is actually giving him so much of ecstasy to him. In fact, Hanumanji told Lord Ram. Lord Ram told Hanumanji to stay in this world. Hanumanji said, I will stay on one condition, that as long as there is a person who is actually discussing Ramayana, I will stay in this world. But Ramayana is filled with distress. So that shows that actually the fact that Hanumanji is daily reading Ramayana, that shows that actually this apparently pitiable condition, the distressing situation, is actually the topmost rasa. Like for example, like in the spiritual platform, all the rasas, all the emotions are actually filled with spiritual ecstasy. The essential element is rasa. In the material platform, all the actually emotions are filled with distress only. Although sometimes a person will be jubilant, or we see advertisements and like people, somebody is like drinking something or smoking something, he may appear to be jubilant, but actually the essential element is in the material activities only distress. When the spiritual platform, essential element is rasa, spiritual ecstasy. Just like the devotee gave the example, like suppose if there is a train, in a train there is like first class compartment, or second class compartment, or third class compartment, and there are like toilets, general compartment. So different compartments have different facilities. But when you make a cake in the shape of a train, suppose that cake made in the shape of a train, that also has the first class compartment, second class, toilet, engine, etc. So it is not that if you taste the engine portion of the cake, or if you taste the like general compartment of the cake, it will taste like bitter. Maybe the first class compartment of the cake will taste sweeter. No, everything will taste same because essentially it is composed of sweetness. Or like last time when you went for South India Yatra, because devotees worked hard, made so much of arrangement, but it's like some devotees were like, they were just expressing their feelings. There was like, Yatra was very good, Prasadam was very good, it was filled with variety. Just one problem. Only problem was, all the items in the prasadam, they were only made of rice. If you remember, like last when you went for South India, there was like varieties of prasad, like 7 to 8 items. Like, but then, what was the prasad? Like tamarind rice, coconut rice, or sweet rice, or lemon rice, or curd rice, or dosa, or idli. Basically, everything was composed of rice only. So similarly, the point, so some devotees like that, there was no chapati, so we're finding difficult. So the point I'm trying to say is that the spiritual platform, although these devotees are actually exhibiting some anxiety, but they're actually in the topmost ecstasy because it's actually composed of rasa. So that is why, even like when we translate our own, you know, the difference between, like Prabhupada says, an expert devotee will understand that an apparently pitiable condition is the topmost ecstasy. But an inexperienced devotee will not be able to understand this. So similarly, even in devotional service, the difference between the Kanishtha Adhikari and the advanced devotee is that an advanced devotee, he will not take any service to be an ordinary service. Because when he sees like, this is actually service to Krishna, he will not take anything to be an ordinary. And an inexperienced devotee, just like Prabhupada says, he may consider both pitiable condition to be, oh, it is an inferior rasa, or ecstasy to be an superior rasa. Like, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj in the Vrindavan Yatra, he mentioned particularly it was like very inspiring for me. He was narrating the story of Shyamananda Pandit. He was saying that Shyamananda Pandit, he was given the service by Jiva Goswami just to sweep the floor, pathway between in the Seva Kunj. So Shyamananda Pandit, every day he was just sweeping the floor. That was the service. But just by sweeping the floor, he was doing with so much sincerity that Srimati Radharani, he actually got the mercy of Srimati Radharani. You know the story that how Srimati Radharani lost her bracelet and then she sent Lalita Devi, and then Lalita Devi brought Shyamananda Pandit. So there Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning, he said actually any service, nothing in Krishna consciousness is actually ordinary. He said that when a person does not take any aspect of Krishna consciousness to be ordinary, and when a person is grateful for any service, then a person actually gets the mercy of the Lord. So this is the difference between a Kanishtha Adhikari and advanced devotee. And like we see, like another point, and more point, but I will just conclude with this. Another important point. We see that, like when we see the, like last time I mentioned that there is favorable and unfavorable things. Rupa Goswami mentions out of the 6 symptoms of surrender, the first is anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjita. Accept whatever is favorable and reject whatever is unfavorable. Here we see that there are certain things which are favorable for us in the beginning, but they are unfavorable for other devotees. Like when we understand that how Krishna is actually Atma Rama and how he is supremely powerful, it is actually favorable for us to actually perform devotional service. You will actually perform devotional service with great attention. Otherwise, like inattention means like, that means like we are not conscious of the greatness of the Lord. So when a person is actually understand that Krishna is self-sufficient, that is actually favorable, because when you understand Krishna is actually Atma Rama, then we actually understand that actually it is not that Krishna needs our service, it is actually, it helps us to make us humble, because otherwise we will think that, oh, actually Krishna needs our service. One may become proud, oh, may think, oh, if I don't do this, one may think, oh, if I don't do this service, then actually maybe this whole system will collapse, or temple will collapse, something like that. People think, sometimes a person becomes proud, oh, if I don't do this service, then this service will not be done. Somebody may think like that. But actually, when you understand Krishna is Atma Rama, he is actually self-sufficient, then it actually helps us to become humble. Then we actually, although Krishna does not need our service, but still he is accepting our service out of his kindness. Then a person feels grateful and he actually renders service in a humble attitude. But when Mother Yashoda, like this aspect of Atma Rama, again in the fifth canto, in one particular verse, when the Brahmanas in the sacrificial arena of King Nabi, when the Supreme Lord appeared, they were actually glorifying the Lord. They say that all of the life's goals and opulences are directly, self-sufficiently, unceasingly, and unlimitedly increasing in you at every moment. So Krishna's opulence are increasing self-sufficiently, unlimitedly, unceasingly, increasing at every moment. But still, when Krishna is accepting our service, it actually is causeless mercy. So that actually helps us to render service in a proper mood. So when a person is proud, that means like he is not aware of the Atmaram nature of the Supreme Lord. But when Mother Yashoda, if she actually thinks that, oh, Krishna is Atma Rama, that is actually unfavorable for her devotional service. Then she will think like, how, like if Krishna is Atma Rama, then Krishna is supremely powerful, then that becomes unfavorable for her. So why should I go? Krishna will take care of himself. Krishna will like feed himself. So this aspect of favorable and unfavorable, it is actually a dynamic thing. In fact, like when we compare Mother Yashoda with like Bharat Maharaj, it's a very interesting point. I will just explain this point and then I'll end this. Like if you see this particular verse is similar to verse in the life of Bharat Maharaj. Like Mother Yashoda is thinking that, oh, Krishna may be troubled by this other animals, so I should go and take care. So she became disturbed in their household duties. Like even Bharat Maharaj, like when he became attached to the deer, he started thinking that this deer is actually in a helpless situation. This deer has lost his father and mother. So I am the father and mother of this deer. And this is an arrangement of the Lord that this deer actually has come to me. And deer is also thinking in this way, and deer has put complete faith in me. I should not be envious, so I should actually be selfless and I should try to take care of the deer. I should raise the deer, I should protect the deer. And I should gratify and fondle the deer, I should not neglect the deer. And Bharat Maharaj, when he was performing his worship, daily worship of the Lord, in between he would start thinking, and maybe what happened to the deer? Is the deer in a comfortable situation? And then he would get up from the worship and he would go and see the deer. And when you would see that deer is in a comfortable situation, then he would be peaceful and then he would continue the worship. So it appears that Bharat Maharaj's attitude is similar to Yashoda. Yashoda was also disturbed in her household duties. But actually, Vishnu Chakravartakur writes in the episode of Bharat Maharaj. In fact, just in the previous chapter, which describes the Bharat Maharaj's attachment to the deer. When Bharat Maharaj went to the forest, it was described that Bharat Maharaj started exhibiting all the ecstatic symptoms. And because of the ecstasy, his heart started melting in ecstasy. And he could not do his daily regulative services to the Supreme Lord. So then at that time, Bharat Maharaj started thinking, so these ecstatic symptoms are an obstacle for me. And thinking that way, Bharat Maharaj, He was thinking, he used his intelligence, so I should not be succumbed to the ecstatic symptoms, so I should engage in my regulative devotional service. So he considered that ecstasy as an obstacle, as unfavorable for his devotional service. Like Rupa Goswami says in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when Daruka was fanning Krishna, he started exhibiting paralysis, like ecstatic symptom, he started exhibiting paralysis. So he says, like, when a person goes to the stage of prema, there are two results. A person gets symptoms like paralysis, stumbha, and other symptoms. And other result is increasing desire to serve the Lord. And a devotee rejects the first result of prema if it is an unfavorable for his devotional service. And if he accepts the second result, the increasing desire to the Lord, because it is favorable for his devotional service. So Bharat Maharaj considered that ecstasy as an obstacle, but then he fell prey to the compassion for the deer. So that's why Vishnu Chakravarti writes in the purport that the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is an ocean of cleverness, he protected the deer. Because Bharat Maharaj, because of his attachment to the deer, he actually became deer in his next life. But Krishna, who is the ocean of cleverness, he actually protected the deer who was previously Bharat, in order to show that compassion, if it is unfavorable for an execution of bhakti, if it is obstacle for bhakti, it must be given up. So Bharat Maharaj, he actually understood that ecstasy is unfavorable. He rejected ecstasy. But then he could not understand this compassion is unfavorable. He actually fell prey to the compassion for the deer. And then Vishnu Chakravarti says that the Lord actually shows his affection for his devotee by protecting Bharat in the form of a deer, so that he would actually fall in the ocean of remorse in order to drown him in the ocean of prema. He actually protected Bharat. He became deer, but he protected Bharat because he gave him the remembrance of his previous life. So because of that, Bharat Maharaj fell in the ocean of remorse, so that later we would actually fall in the ocean of prema. So here we see the difference between Mother Yashoda and Bharat. Mother Yashoda, she understood the self-sufficient nature of the Lord, how Krishna is Atma Rama, supremely powerful. She actually understood this actually unfavorable for a devotional service. She rejected that. But Bharat Maharaj, he actually rejected that ecstasy when he considered as an obstacle for his devotional service. But he actually fell prey to mundane compassion. But of course, it is an actually arrangement of the Lord, in order to teach all the conditioned souls. So in this way, to summarize, we saw that how actually Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, how he is actually worshipped by all the incarnations, from the example of Rupa Rishabhadev, and how Uddhava's remembrance of Krishna. And we spoke about this particular verse, Anya Bilashita Shunyam. And then we talked about how this desire for liberation is actually greater than any material desire. And then we talked about how the transcendental platform, even an apparently pitiable condition, is actually the topmost ecstasy. And then we talked about Mother Yashoda and Bharat Maharaj. I'll stop here. Beg forgiveness for actually going beyond time. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.